PodNuts wants to thank everyone who supports the network by going to www.podnuts.com/Amazon.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Geeksters episode 151. This is a show where we talk about all things computer-related geekiness. At some point, we're going to talk about it. My name is Martin Obando with Obando Computing. I'm one of the hosts here on this fine, fabulous show. I sure hope that you guys haven't missed us too much. We've been gone. We've had work's been kind of crazy. So we've been away for a couple weeks, but we're back. We're back in action. Unfortunately, though, it looks like we're third amigo list today. So I'm just here with my buddy Tim. Hey, Tim, how's it going?
Good, man. Yeah, I don't know. I hope everything's all right. Mitch, it's just a twofecta today. So
that's not. It's not the tri. It's just a twofecta of.
I don't know. Remember why that went? It was a long time ago. It's
trifecta of turbulence. No.
I'll have to review the tapes.
Yes, right.
Send a page after that.
I'll have my people contact your people.
Good. It's been pretty good here. I'm feeling a little bit better about life. It's warmer. It's warming up. We have temperatures that don't have a negative in front of them, a minus. I actually have bulbs starting up. And so I've heard others say that when they hit March 1st, like that to them is like, yes, I've made it. But March 1st just doesn't do it for me. I mean, first couple of weeks of March can still be a complete disaster. So I don't feel like I'm there yet until I see the first bulb starting up. Son of a gun, a couple of days ago, there they were. And I tell you what, I dragged the family. I said, come, you gotta come see it. So
family meeting in the front yard right now.
That's right. And if they don't move, I call a fire drill.
Yeah, just fire drill. Fire. Just kidding.
You can't say fire drill. You have to say fire. Fire drill.
Oh, before. Just fire.
Just fire.
Yeah. Fire drill. No.
Fire drill. Nah.
Nah. That's why. I guess that's why they don't have any fire drill alarms, because they would just pull it and everybody would just be complacent.
Well, I didn't hear the fire alarm. I just heard the fire drill alarm, and we have one.
Right. And honestly, I didn't care. I mean, I know how to run down the stairs just as fast as that, just as fast as Nancy over there in the second cube. I'm good to go. You don't have to be first. You just have to be faster than other people.
Well, I don't think that's true with fire.
Oh. My bad. I've never been in a fire.
I think it's bears and tigers, but I think fire, fire will get all of you. You know what? That's actually a really terrible thing to laugh at.
I apologize to any of our listeners.
Yeah, bears, tigers, and sharks, you only have to be faster than the slowest.
I'm
the weakest link.
The weakest link. And yeah. Sharks, yeah, I'm totally screwed there. You put a big old white fat guy like me in the water, and I'm just for all my might, and I'm just splashing. That's all I do. I just make big splashes.
Stop drawing attention to yourself. No, I'm swimming. No, you're not.
It's not.
You're
drawing attention. It's not all about you, Martin. It's not all about you.
Sharks swimming around. They're like, eh. He just wants the attention.
That's right. That's right. We're gonna go after them. He's not going anywhere. We'll come back. Well, anyways, hey guys.
You're killing me.
I had something to say, but I can't remember what it was.
Putting slides open over here. Oh my gosh.
Well, glad to be back. I am. It's like I said, it's been a couple weeks. It's been kind of crazy. It could be worse. That's one of the things that has been going on with me. Work's been getting busy. I thoroughly enjoy my job. It's been a lot of little things though. It's been, we got a couple big projects coming up, and they're like Office 365 deployments and, for hosted exchange, but all these just little things like a computer would crash here and a server would crash there. And, you know, I have to do backup.
Lots of little things. Yes.
Lots of little things that, we just moved the data back over, and that was, I mentioned that in my last show. We had a server go down, and I just moved the data over, and they were back up and running, and everything was fine. But which is good. And I do have to say that I have used D7.2 when we were first talking about it, and I've talked to Nick about it, and I thought, you know, there's, I'm going to buy this product. I like this product. I think it's going to work out really well. I'm going to use it every now and then. And if I don't use that product daily, then I don't know what I've done during the day. But so if any of you guys are out there, and this is a free props to Nick Shaw, but if you guys are looking for something, check out D7.2. It is something that I use all the time. And actually, I had a computer in here, And we can talk about this later, but I had a computer in that I couldn't get internet access on, and that was the problem. I couldn't use D7.2 to its full capabilities because of some of the issues that I was having with the computer, but I was like, oh man, now what do I do? So I had to go get all of the D7.2 apps, and I had to go download them. Well, I'll talk about it. So I had a computer in here that the issue was is that it could get an internet connectivity light, and it could say that it was online, but I couldn't get any internet. It was strictly a DNS. When I did NS lookup on a computer, on a site, and if you don't know what NS lookup is, that queries the DNS server for what IP address, you know, when you do NS lookup space CNN.com, it'll query your DNS server and say, what's the IP address for CNN.com? You may get one or you may get multiple in the case of Google. So what would happen is I do a DNS lookup and everything would work. So I knew that port 53 was working, but I'd go to CNN.com, page can't be displayed. Put in the IP address of CNN.com, there it would come up. So something major was causing this computer. And so I was trying to run D7.2. And before I was running it correctly, I ended up having to get a hold of Nick. Before I was running it correctly, I had to go and download, you know, super anti-spyware. No, not that. Sorry. ADW Cleaner, JRT, Malwarebytes, CCleaner. I had to go download all of those apps separately and then put them on the computer. As opposed to just with D7.2, they're just right there.
Bundled package.
So I was able to get a hold of Nick. We ended up talking to Brandon with D7, with Foolish IT, and we were able to get myself a, you know, D7 on a thumb drive that didn't need internet access. And then I was able to run the applications. They couldn't update. Never was able to clean up this computer. I delivered it today. We ended up having to do a full system reload on it.
Yeah, it just fixed it, didn't it?
I worked for days on this computer.
Turned into a quest, and in the end, you had to just bite the bullet and.
I couldn't do a system restore. A system restore would fail. I think the something was downloaded weird and wonky, and it killed the internet. So,
okay. Well, I mean, it happens. I mean, you either have to repair or replace, and at some point, you have to make that decision if you can't repair. So, what precipitated all this? Do you know, or it just came in this way?
I don't know. I have a feeling something was downloaded. Some kind of malware, spyware was downloaded. Something got by the McAfee. Now the version of McAfee that was on there was the yes, and the version of McAfee that was on there was like their mega ultra suite where it had the McAfee, it had the firewall, had the content filtering, had the proxy, had the, you know, so it was, if you wanted to do anything on the computer, it had to filter through McAfee first. So one of the first things I did was take McAfee off. That didn't resolve the issue. But see, McAfee had been working fine. So I don't think it was necessarily a McAfee issue because it had been working and then all of a sudden it just stopped. I don't know. I don't know what ended up causing it, what ended up, I know what fixed it because we reloaded it.
Yeah.
But, for the win. You know, I could boot from to a live, Linux CD and it would work. So I knew it wasn't hardware, but, yeah, it just, it was time for it to be reloaded. So reloaded it. I have the hard drive here in case I missed anything because the data was kind of in different spots. I was able to find most of it, but the gentleman lives about an hour and 10 minutes from me south. Luckily, one of our listeners lives fairly close to me here in my shop area, and so I was able to take him the laptop, and he lives down there, so they're going to do a trade-off down there, and we're kind of doing Pony Express, where I hand it off to one guy and he drives for so far, and he hands it off to the next guy and they drive for so far.
Podnuts relay.
It is a Podnuts relay. It's a relay with a laptop. So, I hear the ice cream man. That's how warm it is here. It's like 68 degrees outside. It has been wonderful. And so now the ice cream truck's back.
Yeah, you're breaking my heart here.
I'm sorry. It was so. My son leaves tomorrow for Disneyland. He and his band, they're heading down to Disneyland. Well, not his band, but the band he's part of from the high school. They're going down to Disneyland. They're going to leave tomorrow afternoon at 2. I'm glad the weather has cooled down. While you guys have been in negative numbers and really cold there in the northeast, Disneyland in Santa Anta last week, it hit 96 degrees. Middle of March, 96 degrees in L.A.
Yeah.
That's so... All the cool air shifted to you, and we just that sucked in all the warm air from, I don't know, Australia or something.
Well, you know, when the Northeast is inside watching television, there tends to be an awful lot of hot air coming out of Hollywood.
Oh yeah, yeah. They all just pointed to Santa Anta and went,
"Hey, we've got an audience."
That's them. That's all them all breathing there in Hollywood. So it's calmed down. Weather's going to be low 70s, upper 70s, low 80s. So perfect Disneyland weather. I can't say that I'm not jealous. I would love to go to Disneyland this week.
Yeah, the whole part sounds great except for the Disneyland part.
Have you ever been to Disneyland?
I've been to Disney World, so.
Oh, I've never been to Disney World.
Yeah, well, you know, Disneyland would fit in Disney World's parking lot, so.
I know. That's. I want to go to Disney World. I you know, I went only a couple times when I was a kid to Disneyland, and now that I'm an adult, I've gone, I think, four times. I love it. I absolutely love Disneyland.
I'm being facetious. I did see where Disney World, I think it's Disney World, recently raised their prices, like,
Across the board.
It's like a day ticket for a child is almost $100. Is that right?
Oh, it's so expensive. So you end up having, I mean, honestly, if you're going to spend that much money, get a multi-day pass. Usually when we go, we do 3 days because we'll do one day in one park. Well, usually you a day and a half in Disneyland proper. And then a day and a half-ish over in California Adventureland. California Adventureland is almost about half the size of Disneyland as far as the rides go. There's lots of other shows to do, but a lot of them are kid stuff. Where Disneyland is kind of, you know, I can spend hours just doing Pirates of the Caribbean and Haunted House, just circling around. But we've gone down a couple times, and just I would love to go down. Bless you.
Night. Well, it's coffee. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it's
I take it back.
You can't have it back. It's too late. It made a big. It was an easy headline for the news, which, you know, they all are. But you dig into it, it's like, well, anybody who walks up to the ticket booth that day and needs in is gonna get gouged. I mean, that's gonna happen at any arena, any stadium, any park, anything. There's so many different ways to get in these places that, you know, almost nobody pays, you know, full price. That it's just like you said, there's a different way if you're going to be there for a couple of days or a package or the whole thing. But yeah, that does sound like an awful lot of money. But you know what? If you're walking up there to the ticket booth that day to any event and you want in, you almost have to expect to open your wallet. So
right.
Anyway, right. $100 is a lot to get into. You know, $100. It does seem like an awful lot of money to pay for the privilege to get in and pay a lot more money for. And everything you're going to buy inside. It's like, oh, thank you for the privilege of buying this $5 Coke. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So a one-day ticket for ages 10 and up. So they have 3 to 9 and 10 and up. So 10 and up, $99. A two-day ticket, $92.50. Oh, no. $185. A three-day ticket, $235. A four-day ticket, $260. And a five-day ticket is $275. And those are for adults. 10 and up. So $235 times 4.
Oh, yeah, that's like a car to me.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Then there's airfare. So $940 right now. My whole family was to go to Disneyland. $940 just to get in the park. That doesn't include food, drinks, rental, airfare. It's a big thing. So my wife and I are going to go back down to Disneyland. I think we're going to do that for our vacation. Her and I, a weekend away.
Does that work? Does that work for your wife? Go to Disney World or Disneyland? That's like me saying, yeah, baby, happy 30th anniversary. Let's go ingressing, man.
No, she wants to go because it's just us. It'll be just us. We both have a really good time.
I go anywhere. Just as long as it's us, we go anywhere.
Just the two of us.
That's right, man. Well, you didn't have the tractor pulls.
What was it? Bosom buddies. What? All right. I'm trying to figure out. So, Open Mesh. I've talked about them before. I used Open Mesh is what I use for a lot of coffee shops. I have one coffee shop, and they just deployed their fourth site downtown Portland, right on Division Street, kind of the cool area of town. And we first thing we did was put in an Open Mesh wireless. It has the captive portal. People can sign in. We can do
portal
tickets. So when you log in and you put in the password, you have to agreements, and then you have to hit accept for you to be able to get to use their network. So one of the things that's different about Open Mesh versus something like Ubiquiti and I don't know about Meraki, and so somebody may want to write in or call us regarding that information, is that Open Mesh uses a cloud-based web application where something like Ubiquiti, you send all of that data back to your own server so then you can log into your server. Well, if you don't have a server or you want to do something cloud-based so your client can look at the data, their traffic and how many people are online and how fast the data is going and who's downloading, OpenMesh, OpenMesh. They're actually right here in Tualatin. They're really close. They moved up here, but you know, I just get these little access points, put them up there, and they do have PoE. Oh, I've definitely talked about them before, but they're just a great little product. I really, really enjoy them. So we have a new coffee shop there today. I had to go back down there today because the little TP-Link that we got for them for their internal network, just as a simple basic TP-Link, nothing too fancy. It has a button on the back of it that you hold, you press it once and it activates the WPS, and you press it and hold it and it's the reset button. It's an external reset button, which I've never liked. So I turn off WPS on all the routers as well as anybody else should. And
these buttons be easily confused?
Yes. So as a matter of fact, they held the button.
It's not like the reset's a tiny little recess thing that you need a paperclip for.
Nope.
That's the worst thing I've ever heard.
And I mean, the higher end TP-Links, which I have a couple here in my home and I deploy them, they have the recessed button where you have to use your paperclip, you know, the official tool of all techs nationwide. Right. And, but this button has external. So he held it thinking, I'm going to make the WPS work that way, and boop, kicked everybody offline, nothing printed, nothing worked, because it's this router provides access to their printer, to their point of sale system, to the cash drawer. So I went in remotely yesterday through a Mac, remoted into a Mac, and reconfigured everything. And Dor reminded me then that TP-Links, if you have a TP-Link, you can actually set it all up, back up the configuration. And I said, oh, I have a backup of that configuration, and just was like, dope. So next time, I'll remember, because I've been bit now, that you just get back into it, say restore from the config file, and Bob's your uncle. My wife actually has an uncle named Bob, so I can legitimately say that.
Yeah, Bob's your uncle. I can say it.
Well, Bob's my uncle-in-law.
Bob's my wife's uncle.
Bob's my wife's uncle.
Uncle-in-law. Well, you know, I was thinking that there probably could be, you know, a config file you could back up, and even when I'm deploying like routers at somebody's house, you know, it doesn't take but, you know, a few moments just to make that config file. And it's definitely been very convenient for me at times, because especially, you know, I say even at in a residential setting, but especially in a residential setting, because people are just nuts. They do crazy things. And so it's a lot of, it can make things very, very easy to do that. And I have, I'll tell you what too, that's a function that I think most routers and whatnot have had that function. But you know where I found it really, really, or actually in my life where I use it a lot, is where I have a DDWRT router that I use in different scenarios. So sometimes it's in my garage and it acts as a repeater here at home, and sometimes I chuck it in the car and I use it as a repeater for when I'm tethering. And then, you know, and then everybody, you know, of course, I mean, it's like when we're traveling. So, you know, the kids, they got their stuff, and that way it's not lighting up my phone, that the router itself is actually doing a lot of the heavy lifting. And so, I've got a couple other scenarios which I use it, but you know, I have those config files backed up as far as all the settings, and it's instead of reconfiguring every time I want to do something, it's just, bam, I just upload the config file for whatever the scenario is, and boom, Bob's your uncle-in-law.
Preach it.
Got it, baby.
So my daughter, okay, my daughter's iPhone, it's an iPhone 5C, so it's a color one. It displayed the time, but it was lagging. It just wouldn't work. And what I mean by that is it showed yesterday's date and it would take 24 hours for the clock to go a minute. Reboot the phone. I would change the time zone. Cupertino, back to Portland, to Denver, back. It just wouldn't work. So I had the pleasure.
And this is like just the system clock.
Right, just the system clock. So I had the...
And everything, when you got calls, they were all timestamped the wrong date and everything.
Yeah, everything worked though. She can get online. But what was interesting is for some reason, she was using like 60% of all of our 30 gigs of network traffic. Ooh. Like something was weird. And I have a feeling it was just constantly going out and trying to get the time. and it was constantly using the internet, not the wireless or something. But she would say, I'm on wireless. And I'm like, but look, Olivia, you can look, I'm looking at the graph and I'm like, you're using 60% of all of our web traffic for, you know, of our data plan. And, so I said, you know what? I'm just going to take it down to Apple Store. I need to do this. So I had the pleasure, and I do mean pleasure, of going to an Apple Store, the clear box. I was there early. They didn't open till 10, and I got there about 9:15. Didn't realize that. And so they had their little huddle, and they were clapping, and they were in a circle. And it was very, not my words, not my words. I'm going to say this is, Uncle Bob in law's, niece that it was very cultish, if you will.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But dropped it off. They looked at it. They tried to tweak with it. They said, yeah, it needs to get replaced. So they replaced it, came back in about an hour. Boom. New laptop, new thing. One week later, it's, it was dropped by somebody who shall not be named, who's, on the Geekster show with a beard. I'm just going to say that. But I took it back.
And I don't live anywhere near him, so.
Right. So who's got two thumbs and dropped their daughter's iPhone? This guy. But as far as Apple knows, it just stopped working. Because what I didn't know is I forgot that my wife and I had purchased the extended warranty on these phones. So that's how we were able to get the other one replaced so easily. So I took it back and I said, hey, it's not turning on now. It just constantly, you plug in and it just vibrates and stops and vibrates and stops and vibrates and stops. It never turns on. So they said, yeah, we're going to have to replace this. Or they said, it sounds like a digitizer is bad, so we're going to replace the screen. I said, not a problem. Then they said, well, come back in an hour. I came back in an hour and they said, yeah, we couldn't fix it. Bad motherboard. We're going to replace the whole phone. So I've been to the Apple Store now. I've never actually stepped foot into an Apple Store, and now I've been every week for the last 2 weeks.
So are you going now in the mornings and spending time, you know, doing the coffee jacks and the humming and the whole thing? Or?
No, I'm trying to stay away from there. Now, I do have to go back again because my son's phone is not working correctly, and it's still under warranty, so I said, we really have to go get you.
You sound like a guy that's finding a lot of reasons to go down there. It's like, honey, what happened to the washer? Hammer.
I got to go to the iTunes store. I got to. No. I run Linux. I got to go to the Apple store.
Oh, goodness gracious.
I do find when I'm there, though, I'll be checking my phone, and then I'll put it on the counter. I don't put it in my pocket. I put it where other people can notice that, oh, by the way, yeah, this is an Android phone. Or open up my Linux laptop. Oh, yeah, no. I'm running Linux right here.
Wow, these guys are geniuses, huh?
I know. So, two times.
Fascinated about this time and date thing.
They don't know what it was. They just put a new phone in, gave me a new phone. I said, all right.
That fixed it.
You know what? Hey, I wiped and reloaded the computer. They gave me a new iPhone. My daughter's happy. She gets a new phone. And then, you know, I turn around and we spend money because we want to protect the screen. Yeah. So I spent money on a very nice screen protector. A week later, I dropped it on the back so it didn't touch the screen at all. Spend money on a very new nice screen protector. iPhones, man. I see iPhones. All they do is they just suck your money.
Yeah, and they don't even tell you what time it is, right?
They just do it.
It's like, you want to know what time it is? It's time to buy a new phone.
Perfect.
Oh, yeah? We're going back in time.
Just the two of us. I had a lady call me up who is, she's the wife of a customer, and she said, I spilt coffee on my laptop. She says, I was holding coffee. The dog jumped up, bumped my coffee. I said, what? The report came in as, you know, some of the keys don't work. Some of the keys do. It still turns on. I said, well, what was in the coffee? Oh, you know, cream, sugar, shot of Jack Daniels, yeah, you know, the normal stuff that you would normally drink on a, you know, Monday morning at 8:30 in the morning.
Shit up a little bit.
You know, hey, happy St. Patrick's Day. Happy St. Patrick's month. who are we kidding here? And that's really ish. You do know it's February 10th. That's close enough to St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah. Right.
So she had a Dell Inspiron N5110. Okay. And so great thing about this one is all you have to do with this Dell laptop. So I purchased a laptop keyboard for her. It was like $35. You open the laptop up. You take out the battery, of course. There's four pins across the back. You pop the pins. The laptop keyboard pops up. You slide it out. You undo the cable, you put the new cable back in, you pop it back in, you push it down, done. I didn't have to field strip the laptop. I didn't have to do anything. And it worked out really, really well. So it's not a very
Anybody not watching the video, listening to that explanation, his hands were actually doing it. He's like, you pull out the four pins, you pull the keyboard, right, you undo the thing, you stick it back in. And like, as soon as he was done, it was like he threw his hands up, like, time.
Time.
Call time.
Time.
And he's backed away from it, and then he mic dropped.
That's right. The judges came over, checked it out, looked at it. I got 8 seconds.
It looked just like the rodeo where, you know, the cowboy, he winds that rope right, and he just backs away, throws his hands in the air, like, boom.
I was wearing a cowboy hat and boots when I did it, so I think
man,
it counted.
You know what? That would be awesome. It's like computer repair. Everything done, 8 seconds or less.
That's be a great video.
Oh, the PC rodeo.
PC rodeo. Time.
We can't fix it in 8 seconds. You don't pay.
That's right.
Man, you know what? That would be like the best week of computer repair ever.
We would lose money so fast.
Well, it would be a week. The venture would last about a week, but it would be absolutely a blast. Probably the best. You know what? We would make the most money the second week selling the videos.
That's true. We would be YouTube phenomenons.
Oh, that would be, it would just, yeah, it's, that's right.
I would have enough money to buy an extra mic that I could drop it, because I don't want to drop this one.
An extra what to drop? Oh, extra mic to drop.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, you, oh no. Oh, wait. We do an iPhone drops.
Oh, that's not 8 seconds. That's too many times. 12, 6, round of 3. Too many.
Hey, whatever gets us back in there tomorrow morning.
That's right. Anybody, any listeners want me to take their iPhone in tomorrow? I mean, I don't ever want to go back to the Apple Store again. All right. One of the things that I did this week, 2 weeks, was I ended up having to reload a Windows 7 computer again, a couple of them. And I did notice that Microsoft has come out with their software recovery web pages. So there's two sites you can go to, and all you have to do is put in the key. So you have a key, but you don't know which version of the operating system you need. So you put in the key in these sites, and it runs a little check, and then it gives you a ISO that you can download.
Nice.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. You just put it the first one. It's pretty nice. Unfortunately, mine didn't verify. So,
naturally, right.
Right. So what I ended up having to do was use the key that was on the computer, and then do the phone. You know, the put in the many different numbers for the phone. But then it did register. I was able to activate it. But so if you have a Windows 7 that you need to reload and you don't have an ISO for it, check out these sites.
What happens if it's a Dell machine? I mean, you're not going to get the Dell. It's just the Windows OS. That's nice,
right,
though. You know, I mean, because all the Dell stuff can be had otherwise if you wanted it. But geez, I mean, how many times you get a factory machine? It's like first thing you do is wipe it. And so this is this is great. This actually answers a really old question from Podnuts forums, and that's, where do I get these ISOs? Because it caused quite a firestorm about torrents and should not use torrents. And
right.
Well, there was a process where you could go and find the if you went to Microsoft and you had the version you had needed, it would give you the hash. Right. So then if you search the hash and you check the hash once you download it, you know, then you have a good copy. So that it was a really cool way of verifying that you know, using the torrents, but verifying you had the right product. But geez, how easy is this? What's the catch? I mean,
I don't know. Well, remember Digital River used to have the ISOs.
Yes, that's true.
And now I don't know if they're still going.
I think there was some issues there.
Yeah. So what I did a long time ago is actually go and download all of the ISOs. Like, I have a Windows 7 Pro 64 and 32-bit ISO, because the ISO, having the media is not illegal. That's not you can have media all day long. So I have a home premium and a home, and I think I have a pro, just the media. And then when I reload the systems, then I can go ahead and pull, I can use the key that's on the computer. But if you don't have the media, this is a place where you can get it.
That's all in the up and up.
Yeah. So.
But this is, this is very nice. This makes it very easy to verify you have the right product, you're getting the right product, you got the right disk, and getting it without fooling around. So, wow, very nice.
Yeah.
But I wonder what happens if you punch. I'm assuming that you can punch in a Dell tag or something, and still get the product that you need, but just be.
Well, when I punched in, because I believe this was a Dell system, it wouldn't take that ISO.
Hmm.
So. We ended up, I ended up just, you know, I ended up putting the key in. It didn't like it, doing the phone support, and then going that route. So,
if I had something right next to me, I'll check it. But okay, all right. Well, that's a good find, man.
Yeah, yeah. This is so everybody has heard me talk about CrashedMine before. I had a site, the school that went down, the raid was lost, and so I moved everything over to another server. Took 18 hours. I pulled all the data back down. And where they were up and running, and it was great. So had a client call me. Actually had a client. Okay. Have a client who they use FileMaker. And I don't know if you've heard of FileMaker. They run a lot on Macs, but it's a database for, customers. You can put, customer data in there. You can put their phone numbers and you can put products. I think it does invoicing. It's kind of all in one, have you heard of ACT software?
Yeah, and you know, I think we have discussed this before because you had issues and I couldn't figure out what the heck this thing does. I think. I googled it and it was kind of like, we are this and
that's right.
You need it. But sure. It never really like went into what it did. I was like, well, that's kind of Apple-y of them.
Right. Yes, it is very Apple-y. So received a call from the owner of the company saying, hey, can you talk to our database guy? And I said, sure. So he says, so we're making some changes to FileMaker. We're going to upgrade it. Do you have backups? I said, yeah, I have a backup. I use CrashedMine. It backs up the database every night. It's, you know, I have backups. Thinking he just wants to know if I have backups, if I'm backing things up. Yeah. The next day I get a call from the lady and she is pretty distraught. I don't think she's going to cry, but she's past the point of she's just in total shock. They spent all of this time, and this is what the product that they've been using, and it has all of their data and information. They're a construction company, and so they have thousands of parts that they resell. Okay, and I get a call from her, and she says, "So last night they did the update, and the update went smooth, and then they had to re-import some data, and they re-imported the wrong data." And she says, "Now all of our stuff is wrong. It's gone."
That's okay. So what was she upset about?
Well, because they didn't know all of it. Yeah. Seriously.
Obviously, yeah. Everything. I mean, this is bad. This is very bad. The world
very bad.
Is crashing around her.
Right. Yeah. Production of their company, of their, you know, multi-million dollar company stopped. So, it's probably not multi-million, but, so she says, what can we do? And I said, well, have the guy who was there last night, re-import the correct data. And he goes, well, he doesn't have that. He didn't. I said, didn't he export the data? Or make a secondary backup, if you will, before he messed with the database. No, because you said you have a backup. I'm like, okay. So my backup is for catastrophic failure, and I don't, you know, but generally speaking, most techs, when you go to do something, you back up the data and then you work on it. Whether it's a hard drive, you back up the hard drive before you mess with the hard drive. You back up data from a database. You can export the data. You put it in a different location, maybe on a thumb drive, so you know that that is separate data. Because it sounds like they had two exports and they imported the wrong one back in and they didn't have the other one. They destroyed it or lost it. So CrashedMine. They have CrashedMine. So it took me 5 minutes. I was able to download the database. Copy over, I basically moved the where all the data was to another location, created a new folder exactly the same name so I didn't have to change any pointers, put the data back in there, and they were up and running. It took about a half an hour, but CrashedMine again saved it. It just was back up. I don't have to worry about it. Every night it backs things up and it's set up to go. So Washington, the Wall Street Journal, came out with an article and it's the title is bad. It says the best ways to back up your computer. Now it's not a how to back up your computer. They're comparing CrashedMine, Carbonite, Backblaze, and SOS Online. And, they go through all the finer prints. They actually have a little graph that talks about how much it costs and what the pros and the cons and things like that are. When you get down to the very last sentence, he says, for ultimately, I trust CrashedMine to do a better job safekeeping my data than I can because that's its business. I'd rather spend my time taking pictures. So, again, CrashedMine for the win, at least for me. I know that other people have different ones. I have been very pleased and with CrashedMine and really, really enjoy it and have no qualms with it.
This guy had something bad happen and he managed to get out from underneath it, but it was just enough of a wake-up call. He said, you know, I got to do something. So he was using Crash Plan initially, right? And now he's just reevaluating them, these products?
Well,
he was using Crash Plan, but this article here is just where he's reevaluating the products available, including Crash Plan, right? I'm thinking. But it's a pretty good article. I mean, he does kind of go through all the, you know, the ins and outs of the different products, you know, and although I think, you know, ultimately he does kind of arrive at Crash Plan. He does mention things about it that, you know, caveats, you know, things that should
right.
know. So he, right. you know, it's not like, oh, that's perfect and all that. It does seem like a pretty good article. I think that it, now it's entitled The Best Way to Back Up Your Computer. I before the show, I was talking to Martin. I said, I don't know if that's the best title for this, but it is a pretty good evaluation of these products.
Right. What it sounds like what he had, he just said, I learned this in my great photo catastrophe, in 2012 on a vacation to Italy with fancy pants camera. I saved gigabytes and gigabytes of Tuscan sunsets on a new portable drive. But when I got home, plugged it in, the drive started to chirp like a cicada, whatever that is. Cicada. Yeah, that's it. He says, my photos would only show up.
I love how he fixes this.
Right. My photos would only show up, and then I gave the drive a firm thwack. I recovered many of my shots, but it took about a week of thwacking and fretting because I became obsessed with backing up my digital life.
That's not what we do. That's not how we do that. So
right. That's so he that. Yeah, his point was, a week of you know, he would back.
What is it?
Thwacking?
I can't even. Anyway, whatever he's saying, don't do it. That's not the way.
Right.
But it worked for him, but it's not Podnuts recommended.
No, Podnuts, yeah, don't smack the side of your hard drives because it could cause huge issues. So he was just putting things back in line just to read a couple sectors and then putting things back in line to read a couple of sectors. Because if it started chirping, that means that the head is all messed up, right?
There were marbles in it.
Yeah. So, so he goes through all four and talks about and goes with Crash Plan. So I just wanted to bring it up because, like I said, I am a huge fan of Crash Plan. It's cross-platform, Linux, Windows, Mac. You know, he talks about he talks about it being at $60, and that's for one computer. If you have a family computer, families of computers for the year, it's $150 for a year, and that's up to 10 computers, unlimited amount of data. So if, you know, the price drops way, way down the more computers you use. And that's what I have. I pay $150 a year, and I can take 10 computers, unlimited amount of data. And it doesn't get backed up into one folder. It gets backed up to each individual folder. What's nice is if you take all your data, and I've done this many times, especially with my computer, because I use CrashPlan on my Linux box, is I have a folder structure, right? And I need to reload the operating system for whatever reason, and I put the folder structure back in the same spot. When you re-sign back into Crash Plan, it will say, what would you like to do? A new backup? Or would you like to inherit another backup? And I say, inherit this backup. And it goes through and it says, oh, this folder, you know, my documents are in my documents, and it sees everything and it synchronizes everything. And then all it does is back up what's new. It doesn't need to spend that whole big time backing everything up. So you can inherit backups, which is a great time saver.
Very cool.
I like it.
Yeah. How much did you say? I mean, you know, you said there was the price for one machine, but you said
right.
Like
so it's
what was just last year?
So it's $150 a year for up to 10 computers, two to ten computers for $150 a year, unlimited amount of space.
So cheap,
right? So one computer is $60. Two computers is $120, and then but you can also do the 2 to 10 computers for $150. So if you're only going to do two computers, buy two individual licenses. You don't have a central dashboard to manage each of them. You have to manage them separately. But actually, that's not true. I think you can manage each one under the same dashboard. But as soon as you hit three computers, buy the family plan, because now it's just, I mean, everything else after that is free. You've already spent more than it would be to spend three individual ones. So computers four through 10 are ultimately free, and it backs up anything on your computer. And it just, you can set it to back up all the time, or you can time it. I've had no problems with it. Use it. I get emails from all my sites telling me whether it's been backed up or not.
How can you integrate that into GFI, or can you?
No, GFI has their own backup application.
Yeah.
So they don't.
Yeah, we did. I think we did monkey around with that some. I was just wondering what notifications or what what integration is like? I mean, it can at least tell you it worked or it didn't work or something.
Right. Yeah. I'll get an email from GFI, I'll get an email from CrashPlan, from Code42 that tells me, you know, these computers at what percentage have they been backed up? Right. So it'll let me know. And then I also get emails from them saying that because my wife will turn off her computer and maybe won't use it for a couple of days. Hey, this computer hasn't been updated in 2 days. So
I was just wondering if in the GFI dashboard there was something that at least just red, yellow, green light it.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. So this is definitely, I have my GFI information over here and I have my CrashPlan information over here. The two don't integrate because GFI, of course, wants you to use their backup, sure. which I understand. But speaking of GFI, man, I have new users on GFI almost every week. Just a great product.
Smart is blowing up over here.
I've been so happy with GFI. I was just taking a look here, just opening it up. Liam actually chimed in on one of the Voxer things earlier today, and he says he loves this, that when he opens up GFI and everything is white, because that means there's no issues. Now on mine, I have a couple things that are red right now, but I have 8 servers and 155 workstations in my GFI right now.
And it's so awesome. I mean, the power, once you get that, go back and listen to the tapes because I said it. It's like once you get it all configured, I'm kidding, but like I know everything, but it was just amazing how, I mean, I remember starting out, it's like the thing was kind of clunky, I could figure out, it's like, I know it was a few years ago, but then once you finally got it rolling, I got it figured out, everything was configured, it was like, man, you just bring up a screen and it's just like, bam. I mean, the power that you had over so many machines, and it just really, really just, because it literally, it's like a sewer pipe of data coming at you. But I mean, GFI is like, here you go. You just need to know this and this and this. And I mean, you could, it was almost like Google, like, you know, just like a whole planet's worth of information, fingertips. It's like, I only want to know this. And that's kind of what GFI does. Once you get it configured, it's like, and you can just start acting on it, you know, well, these things, and you just kind of go through it. You get down to like these warnings. It's like, oh, okay. Well, I can see where maybe we're going to have to put a drive in this machine instead of waiting 3 months and it blows up. I mean, it was just so amazing how much power that thing gave you over like this vast empire of machines. You know, if you were just like at your desk or during the day, laying in bed at night, you would have a lot of things to wonder about. But I mean, GFI right. is just like, just tells you, it's like, this is, here you go, a snapshot. This is what's going on out in the world. So I really thought that, I mean, there was really something magical about that dashboard. Just like, here you go. This is what's happening. So right. I'm really glad. I'm so glad to know like you guys are using it and it's a good product that's only gotten better and that you're getting a good use out of it. So,
right. Well, I mean, so I'm looking at all my sites right now. You're talking. I thought I'd go through and look and see what's going on with my sites. So I've had a couple computers that are saying things like, so we talked about backup integration. It will notify me when a Windows backup didn't fail. And I see that. I have a server that right. the Windows backup hiccuped and it'll restart the backup tonight. So I get a notification for that. Okay, that's pretty easy. Then I go look under something else and I go, oh, wait, it looks like my sister's computer, she did something and 2 threats and 126 traces in the quarantine. Well, what's going on in there? So I go to my antivirus and I go to the quarantine, my web search.
Yeah, all right.
My web search toolbar at 9:12 this morning, my web search, 49 traces and the toolbar, 6 traces at 209. 67 and 4. So I go and I just go highlight those because I've already been quarantined. Right click on them and I say delete from quarantine. Now I know that my sister's computer did not get infected when she tried to install something that had my web search toolbar on it. It already grabbed it. It's proactive. And now I can clear the warning on that and go about my business. And it's just that simple. It's so proactive. I don't have to worry about it. Flipping the switch.
You're just George Jetson now. Sit dash, push buttons, flipping switches.
I am the Homer Simpson in the wherever he works. Nuclear power plant.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. So one of the other.
Is that the Springfield? The Oregon Springfield? Is that where?
It's kind of been back and forth. I don't know.
I mean, if you work at the power plant, it's good to live in a different town.
Especially yeah, I don't want it to happen Simpson. Here. Yeah. Right. Home. Yeah. Sorry. No Homer. No thanks. While I was waiting in line for Apple, I received a phone call from one of my clients, and she said that her Excel spreadsheet, she would work, she would do data, and as soon as she hit save, what would happen is Excel would crash, and it would tell you there's been an error, it would shut down. It wouldn't actually do anything. So how do we fix that? Well, I did some research on that and really never came up with a very good fix for it. What I did come up with and what I did find was an article from the microsoftsupport.office.com that basically says Excel stops responding, freezes, hangs, or just stops working altogether. And you know what they do, and I forgot that Office 2013 has this feature on it, and I think some of the other ones do, is there's a repair option. You go into Add Remove Programs, click on your Office, go to Add Remove Programs. Up in the top, there's a repair or change, isn't it? Yeah. Just click on change and then click on repair. There's two options. One is kind of just a it do itself type option. It takes a little bit of time. I did that. It didn't work. And then, I mean, there were some other steps that I had done ahead of time before we got to this step. But I
don't think it's doing anything. It's just like, it just gives you a clock or something to watch. Go get a cup of coffee. You come back, and when you come back to the room, it just gets up real quick. Like, it looks busy.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm sorry, I couldn't fix it.
Right. And so it didn't fix it. So I thought, oh, okay. But I mean, before this, I had done some other stuff. We tried it from an old document, tried to save it. I mean, Excel itself, it didn't matter on the document. Anytime Excel saved, it hung up and then locked up and then closed, never saving anything. So we ran the longer online one. And I think it took about an hour and it fixed it. Now, what it did do though, is it, when you do the online check and repair for Office, you have to re-register it because it asks you to put the key back in. So you know what it kind of reminds me of is, you know, when you go into Internet Explorer and you reset the settings, you can keep your cookies and your history and stuff like that. Or then there's the full reset. Then you get the welcome to Internet Explorer 11. Click here to, you know, which settings do you want type change. It's kind of like that for Office. But it worked. So if you have any issues with Office and you just are struggling with it, just run the repair. And that seems to work really, really well. It's kind of a shotgun approach, but it works well.
Awesome.
Still, the company that we're trying to do the open DNS with the static IPs and the DDWRT, that's still up in the air. It's been kind of put back on the back burner because we're moving over to a hosted exchange with them. So, and that kind of gets put on the back burner for a little bit, for, you know, a day or two, and then it kind of comes back to the front. We kind of work on it a little bit. And then all of a sudden today, email was not working again. This is the same company that the email, their POP email, has gone down twice. I know that because we've talked about it at least a couple times on the show. So now it's back up in the forefront. Still working with DDWRT, still trying to figure things out as far as blocking port 53 other than through OpenDNS. But so I've had a couple of people email me regarding that, and it's been really nice. So thank you for those emails. But Bitdefender's coming out with a box that says Bitdefender's box hardware protects your entire home network, not just your PC. The new Bitdefender box is capital BOX. So apparently that's the name of it. They said it's a mix between a router, network firewall, and intrusion protection system. It can sit behind an existing router connected to one of its Ethernet ports. It can be placed in front of a router so that it also protects the router from internet-based attacks, or itself can act as a router. It has a smartphone application for either for Android or iOS. It looks pretty slick. It's going to be about $199, it says, which includes the price of the hardware and 1 year subscription. Then it's $99 after that. So I'm interested to see what this is going to be like. Because I've been thinking about doing like a PF Sense box or a Untangle box, you know, with the dual NICs in and out. Usually those, you have to figure out where you're going to put them on your network, and I mean, it can be done, but I'm definitely looking forward to this box. And I don't know, trying to see if it had a date, couldn't remember when it's going to come out, but I think I may have to purchase one just to give it a shot, because it can be any of those devices. It can sit anywhere on your network.
Yeah.
So we'll see when that. And that actually, well, this link here is actually from November of 2014. So I don't know if it has come out yet or not. Bitdefender.com, box to the internet. Looks like it may already be out. I don't know. I'll have to. So if you go to bitdefender.box, yes, you can buy it right now. So I may pick up one of those just to see what it does, see how it works. $199. I don't know. I'll pick up one. See what I think of it.
Tell you what, man. I got something here that's got me real uptight.
Do it.
Yeah. This new MacBook coming out.
Oh, yes.
Got one port. But even like there's not even for power, is there? There's no power port, I don't think.
Well, I think it should have one. I think it has one USB port.
But what about like the charging cable? Where's that?
I think that's the same.
I'm not sure if the charging cable is included. But anyway, the new MacBook has. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to speculate all I want, but I'm willing to sit back and watch because so many times Apple has done something really new and unthinkable, but they were clever enough looking forward and they knew what the near future was going to look like that they ended up being right. And so, I'm sure that when their first portables did away with the floppy drives, I'm sure that a lot of dorks were pulling their hair out and screaming, "You're crazy!" And of course, maybe everybody remembers the saying when they did away with the optical drive. How could you ever do that? How could you ever do away with the optical drive? But they did. They looked into their crystal ball and they were right. When they sold the first portables with a sealed battery, that to me is insane. Why would you not want to be able to just pop the battery out and pop the battery in? But now we're at the point where it's almost unthinkable to buy a sealed phone that you can't change the battery out of. And the technology is there that, generally speaking, in most cases, it's cool and you get away with it. The thing ends up being replaced or repair replaced, and so the end user does not need to replace the battery typically, like especially in a phone. And the thing is that by selling a sealed device, the designers, it opens up a whole new world of designers because they can do a lot more with the device, the space that they have to work in, without having a big chunky thing on the back that they have to work around. So, man, I don't know about this one. I'm not going to start screaming, say this is stupid, but I mean, I see immediate problems here with a single port. Here's your laptop. Where do I plug in it comes with USB-C, and USB-C is the 3.1 standard, but USB-C refers to the connector. So the USB that you're familiar with is an A connector, USB-A, I think that's what it's called. It's the A connector, I believe. If I don't remember any of this crap, I may be making all this up, but I'm pretty sure that the C refers to the connector. The C solves... And I'm going to miss this, but the C actually solves the super connector position, where when you plug in the USB cable, it doesn't fit, and you flip it over and it still doesn't fit, and then you flip it over again and then it fits. Okay, so that is what's known as the super connector position, where position one is wrong, you flip it over, position two is wrong, position three is the super connector position. USB-C will actually be, I don't know, symmetrical, that's not the right word, but it will be the same, I guess, upside and down. It's quite a bit smaller than the USB connector you're familiar with, but it looks amazing. I mean, it solves a lot of problems like that. The throughputs are huge, and it has capability to the video. So all your things, it's all kind of like designed into it. And so does Apple need, like, do you need a designated video port? Well, no, because it's USB-C, there's a standard and it can handle it. Okay, well, cool. So, well, do you need this? Do you need that? No, we don't need any of that crap. We just need this port. Okay, well, great. Well, how many are you going to get? Because we're giving you one. Well, wait a minute. I see where you're going to start needing a lot of adapters and all this sort of stuff. I understand. They want to design around it, I guess the fewer holes there in the machine, the better it's going to be off dust and moisture. But what happens when that one port breaks? I mean, what do you do then? It's a repair. It seems to me like you at least want two of something. Maybe they have that figured out. Maybe there's some way around that. That's the first thing I'm seeing. The other thing is that I'm not sure. I wish I could get confirmation on this because I'm pretty sure that that's also how the thing is powered. I believe that the thing
Well, I remember hearing something about you have to buy like an $80 dongle that goes into there to get other USB ports.
Right. So I have this in front of me, but that's right. I mean, if you have a USB device, you're only going to be able to plug in a single USB device. And there were a lot of things here that had me really kind of uptight and I wanted to bring. But I'm not sure that charging. Here's the line. Apple's reportedly.
No, it looks like, so it looks like I'm looking, so there is one, there's two ports on, there's one on the side, which looks like it's, oh, no, go ahead, I'll let you finish.
It says right here that Apple reportedly allowing for third-party chargers and battery packs under its Type-C implementation, opening itself to another source of infection. And that's what this article was going into, was that that's why I thought that this new USB design that and it would allow for actually charging. So like the laptop, not, I mean like charging, you know, like you plug in your phone to a computer and it charges back the other way. So it's, you know, bidirectional where it's actually charging the computer through the USB port. But that was kind of what this article was bringing up, was that bad USB still exists. And so that was a method of infecting USB devices that would then, upload infected files to the machine, infecting it. And so that was kind of what this one thing was kind of getting into, that they were kind of opening themselves up. But I just don't get that, man. One port. Well, sure, it's beautiful and it looks nice, but you know, at some point it's not a vase. I mean, at some point it's still a computer, and I don't know. It just kind of seems like, give me two, because I'm messing the first one. I'm blanking the first one up. Hotel rooms, man. I need two.
Yeah,
I'm trashing the first one.
I mean, if you look at the device, it's actually pretty. You know, it's super thin. You know,
the laptop itself.
Yep, you're right. USB-C. So it is. It's a port USB-C. That's power, USB, display, HDMI, and VGA. So apparently, you have to shop USB-C accessories. I'm going there. The lightning cable. So it's everything all in one. You use everything.
I'll tell you what, you know what? Hey, look, everybody. It finally happened. We got everything, and it'll fit through. It'll fit through one. All everything through one.
One connector.
It's like you know. We finally did it. You know. Okay. Hey. Well, at least it's Apple and their legions of fans that will pretty much pay anything and are willing to endure anything. You know, so the rest of us can benefit from whatever horrible things might come of this. But
so, what happens if you have to charge it and you need to read something from a USB?
I'm assuming that you are going to get nailed with all kinds. Well, you know, surely the power adapter that they give you would have like a through. Of a throughput or something, and that was one thing that they did mention, that their, you know, the magnetic connector was now going away, which I'm kind of sorry to see that, because I thought that was such a fantastic thing. However, I suppose that maybe all those Apple fans might learn really quickly how much they love those magnetic connectors when their power adapter snaps off the only USB port they have. And there's no docking solution here, so they are not, at least not yet. They have no dock available for this thing, so which would be funny, a dock for one thing, but a dock would be ideal. I mean, a dock, everything plug into it, and then you just unplug this one thing. But anyway, I see a lot here. I think it's awesome, and I'm loving it. I'm really excited about this one thing, but this USB-C and everything it can do. I don't know, man. That makes me a little bit nervous. I would not be sending my wife or kids out of the house with this thing.
Yeah. Nobody wants one point of failure. It doesn't. I mean, and I mean that not to say that Macs are a failure. What I'm saying is that
users failures. Users are failures, because humans are complete failures. Things happen. It's stuff breaks. Good, because Apple wouldn't be selling stuff. You can't sell more stuff if the first stuff doesn't break. I mean, it's good. That's how the world works. So give me a second one, man. Give me a second one. It's gonna.
Well, you can have a second one. They're only.
Rooms, man. I need two because I'm messing the first one up, baby.
You can have a second one. It's only $1,300. Oh, and then $80 for an adapter.
But let me get this straight. I mean, I snap. You know, it's like I damaged the USB port. Oh, that's too bad. Yeah, I can't use laptop. What do you mean you can't? It won't charge.
Right. Well, it's.
Just plug it in. Right.
Swap. I plugged it in. Swap out the button. Swap out the battery. Oh, wait.
Oh, that's right. You can't do that. Oh.
All right.
You know what? That one table. You know that table and you know that table that's it's got a short leg. I think it's just about 16 millimeters short, or whatever the thing works. 5 millimeters. I don't know. I even know how skinny the thing is. But yeah, that's you summed it up. That's one point of failure, and that's not good. That's bad.
Well,
it's like driving a car with one wheel.
Yeah. So
it's a little different.
Yeah.
If you get a flat tire, where are you going? You're not going anywhere.
That's true. You like comic strips. Anybody like comic strips? Calvin and Hobbes?
I wish I could search it, though. I wish it was, like, searchable.
Calvin and Hobbes now is searchable.
As if it's been indexed?
As if it has been indexed. Oh, it's a pretty lengthy URL. I'll put it in the show notes. It'll be in the, awesome. The thing here. But
I've
it's the Calvin and Hobbes.
Calvin and Hobbes indexed, and everything connects to a computer through, like, one pipe. That's why. This is, like, my day, man. Like,
the Calvin and Hobbes, the search engine. And you can put in something like, I put in Oregon. And what happened is it found a word. I can't remember the word now.
Foregone.
But foregone. So the word foregone, they mention in one comic strip, and Oregon is in there. And so you can look up the word Oregon, and he says it's not a foregone conclusion. Unfortunately, MacBook is not listed in there. Apple, the word Apple is listed 11 times, and they give you every single comic and the date that it was published. And actually just the script. So you don't have to view the comic. You can just view the script. So the Calvin and Hobbes search engine.
It is awesome. It really is fantastic.
I love the fact that down at the bottom in the search bar, it says why. Like, why? And he says, I have always been a big fan of Calvin and Hobbes comics since their author, Bill Watterson. Since discovering the complete script online as well as a collection of every daily script on another website, I knew I could make the two reference each other and therefore create a Calvin and Hobbes search engine for the lack of a better name. So I set out to do it. Currently, the search only looks for exact phrases, not case sensitive. So if you're looking for a comic with the word balloon and airplane, you enter them both, or it will search for balloon airplane together. Perhaps in the future I will fix this, but it's actually a lot more difficult than having it as is. There's one exception, though. You can search for a date, and it will find a specific comment. Yes, and then he says all dates work now. Please find the credits for everything found on this page below. Please note that the comic images are kindly hosted by Marcello and that Andrews McNeil University holds the rights to Calvin and Hobbes. Thanks for visiting. So if you want to know what was on your birth date, I don't know. I don't even think Calvin and Hobbes was around on my birthday. Nope, nothing. But you can do, you know, you can't just put it in there.
Yeah, and you know what? That's really, I'm seeing there really is a disparity here because, I mean, there's over 3,000 results for Calvin, but less than 2,000 for Hobbes.
Oh, that's just, poor Hobbes.
You know, I really felt like, you know, although it was a good strip, the author really should have been more fair and balanced.
I think he's anti-tiger. He's a tigerist, if you will.
He is.
Like in Seinfeld, an anti...
Wait a minute. I've heard of Calvinists, but I think... Isn't that different?
So like in Seinfeld, when Jerry doesn't like a dentist, right. I think they call him an anti-dentite. Right. Yeah. So is he an anti-tigerite?
Anti-Hobbesite.
Ooh.
Yeah, because I've actually found that he's pro-tiggers.
Oh.
Yes. So it's really
pro-tigger, anti-Hobbes.
Yeah, it's not really a Hobbes thing. It's not really a tiger thing so much as it's Hobbes. So very, very cool website. I love it. And you know what? It's great for finding you know, some topical thing for whatever G+ post you're putting up today. You need something that relates. Bam, there you go. Searchable.
Christmas card.
It's amazing. Yeah, pretty fantastic. I love it. Great. That was such a great comic strip too.
Oh man, those books are awesome. Couple things. I found GFI. Speaking, we spoke of GFI earlier. So the GFI blog on March 4th came out with the best 35 information security blogs to follow. Of course, the top of the list is things like Schneider on security, Krebs on security, Graham Cutley. He works for Sophos. Let's see who else is in here. Security Watch. Security Watch. Brian Honan. Oh, that's not the one I was thinking of. Naked Security. Man, there's a whole bunch of them here. So if you are SANS security, Microsoft. So it goes 1 through 23, and then all of a sudden 24 through 31 are SANS, and 32 through 35 are Microsoft. So it's probably the 20, it's probably the 31 top blogs. I'm not sure if all Microsoft ones, but anyways, if you are interested in some blogs, there you go. So sweet. And who doesn't love an infographic? Anatomy of a ransomware attack, the crypto locker, crypto wall, and how to stay safe infographic. This one, I thought, you know, infographics are just flat out awesome, but it works. It's cool. You just scroll down. It tells you a little brief history and then how it works. Installation, contacting headquarters, handshaking keys, encryption, and extortion. It's not very long. It's a nice little picture, but maybe this is something you can print out, send it to your Uncle Bob if he gets on the computer a lot.
It actually is a very handsome infographic. I mean, it's like a nice little wall post you put up for your customers, and you just point to the thing they did.
That's right. What did you do? You did number 3. Well, no, you just did number 1. You installed it. What we're going to do, and you now you're stuck on number 5, extortion.
Yeah.
So what do? It says you restrict the write permissions, you educate users, you disconnect from networks immediately, you make regular time for backups. Crash Plan does what's called, I think, warm backups. I don't know if they're technically called hot or cold backups. There's not a There's not a URL, SMB link, map drive. That's the one I'm trying to get there, the third one there. So there's not a map drive. So sometimes if you're backing up data and you plug in your external hard drive and it's back to G, I know that Crypto Locker will jump drives like that. So you could actually get your backup encrypted if it's plugged in. So you want to use something that doesn't ever map a network drive or a drive to it. That way you're going to stay safe. And I know that, CrashPlan does it. And I believe Carbonite does it as well. So just make sure you guys have backups. That's the moral of the story. If this infographic doesn't mean anything, make sure you have backups. I was trying to think of other things that I did over the last couple of weeks because it's been a while. And I don't know if it's just too much to do. New computers to deploy. Just nothing that actually stands out as notable. Major important. Yeah. It's just, just the days would roll around and I'd be driving somewhere. I'd have to go somewhere to fix something. And just timing just didn't work out. And, you know, I definitely love being part of the Geeksters team. Definitely enjoy coming out and talking with you guys and learning, you know, because I learn just as much as I try to teach. I did receive one email. I received a couple emails. If you don't mind me, I'll go through those really quick. This is from John Dubinsky. And he says, Martin, enjoy the Geekster show. There is a possible alternative for you and your clients where you need DNS control. Check out the TP link, TLER6020. I posted a question to their technical support team, and he says, and this is to his question to them. He says, I am wondering if there's any way to provide DNS filtering from this router. What I'm looking for is a way to block port 53 from my internal LAN so that internet clients cannot pull DNS information from the WAN side of the internet. Here's what I'm trying to accomplish. This is a shared internet area with Wi-Fi. I do not have control over to the individual computers connecting. We use corporate OpenDNS to filter access to sites which work great. And three, what I want to do is eliminate the possibility of someone being able to manually enter a DNS on their individual system and bypassing the OpenDNS filtering. Is this possible on the TLER6020? And he says, they say, thank you for contacting TP-Link. This is Catherine. From your description, I think what you need to do is block the clients who use other DNS access to the internet. So you can refer to the action as an access rule. You need to set up two rules for the LAN. First, allow the designation DNS you want from any LAN to any source. And then second, block any destination from LAN to any source. Hope this helps. And he gives a link to this router through Amazon. It was about $150. So I haven't taken a look at this router too much. It's kind of like the one that I currently have. It's not a wired router. It's a box. So I need to mess with this a little bit more because here's the problem though, is it is a box. It's a separate box. And, that may or may not be a problem with, my clients, but we'll figure that out. So I'm going to probably buy one of these and maybe replace my little VPN router with one of these and see if I can block it from inside my house as well. You can buy them with gigabit WAN, dual gigabit WAN, gigabit VPN, it does also come with wireless. So you can get this device in a wireless, and wireless is a whole lot cheaper. That's weird. But I may purchase one of these just to give it a shot and test with it. So thank you, John, for that information.
Very cool.
I'm hoping if this works, then maybe this is something that I can start deploying to clients and will block the DNS because I know on mine, I don't have any way in my little router to say block from any. And that's one of the problems that I run into a lot with the routers is that you can block a computer based on its MAC address, but there is not a way in the lower end ones to block from any because you need that. You need to be able to broad stroke say any connection. So I think once I get a couple little payments coming in, I may, like I said, may purchase one of these and then go ahead and test it out. And if this works, boom, there we go. I can, this is something that I can talk about possibly deploying at each of the sites.
One email you said, right?
Yeah, that was an
Thanks
email.
For that. From, that was great.
Yeah. And then the other one, this one actually came from Door. It was over to, so it went to the Geeksters at Podnuts. He said, this is from Richard. He says, Richard, hi folks. I remember a Geekster episode where Martin mentioned he wanted to use Open Mesh to solve a particular issue. I came across another interesting alternative that more or less completes it. It's, or competes with it. It's called Mesh Potato. And it, and here's a, yeah, it's great called, name. It is a great name. And I will throw this in link here in the chat over here. Mesh Potato, which allows people to create their own little mesh network to share both voice and data and requires relatively little configuration to what I understand from the site. It also has the benefit of allowing you to connect a normal landline phone to the device, allowing users to create their own VoIP systems. I was wondering if anyone has used this in the field, and if so, what are their thoughts? There's also an Ars Technica article dated August 28, 2012 that provides some background of why the device was created in the first place. So take a look at that. I did look at that. It looks just like a mesh. You can do a mesh internal network, kind of like what Open Mesh does, except that this has the ability to take a landline and make it a VoIP line. So, I don't know. I thought that was kind of cool. But you go to villagetelco.org/mesh-potato. But I did get a kick out of Mesh Potato.
Oh, great. How much does this go for? I mean, it's been on sale, it says, since September 2010.
Let's see. Online store, $63. With an external access, the Mesh Potato 2 with phone, $58. The basic with external antennas, $44. And then just the basic Mesh Potato basic edition is, looks like it's $40. Yeah, I'm, it has a WAN port and a LAN port, but so it,
multiple ports. That's so 2010.
Yes, yes it is. You know they're not owned by Apple. Well, Tim, that's what I that's what I'm bringing to the show today.
Yeah, that's what I got. I tell you. It's, you know what? Actually, I, after several years of this program, I've generated the most interest after talking about the cars I fixed. So, I'm just doing that from now on. I'm just fixing. So, I was out laying with my girlfriend some more, and she got a radiator here last week. So, you know, any comments?
Yeah,
you send me. I tell you what, it's.
So she doesn't overheat now.
It's so happy. It's so happy. It's, she just hums. Well, you know, it's had a very, very slow leak for like 2 or 3 years.
She,
you know,
she must be older. She's probably getting up in age.
You know, like all of us, the older you get, the more leaks you develop.
Right. But, and oops, I grabbed my pants.
The older you get, the more spots you leave. Wherever you, if you remain in one place for too long, but
go to my happy place. Happy place. Go to my happy place. I'm sucking on my thumb and I'm rocking back and forth very slow.
Like all of us. But you know, it's like every week or every couple of weeks, you just lift the hood, you know, just top off the fluid. And I've been doing that for so long, I can't remember like not doing it. And so this finally, I broke down. Like, I'm just going to do it. It was just getting ridiculous. So put a radiator in it. And of course I talked about putting a water pump in it here recently. And so, and in the whole process, you know, it's been a new radiator cap, new thermostat, and hoses. And so it's like, wow, you know, it's all like brand new. And it's pretty fantastic. It's actually, I didn't realize what a burden it had been. Just checking the fluid, you know, fluid so often. It's like we're driving it, and everything is just like, it's like, wow, it's like, look at that. The temperature gauge is doing what I remember when it used to do that, like work properly. And you get there and it's like, you smell that? No, I don't smell it either. It's like, I don't smell anything. It's like, wow, it's great. You know, you deal with old things with cars. So, it's just funny when you live with something for so long and you finally fix it and you actually notice like the absence of brokenness that you've become like just so accustomed to it. So anyway, that was the latest adventure in auto repair. And, so very, very pleased with that. Warm weather, being in the garage, everything. I am just very, very happy about a number of things. And I'm like, I don't have to be in that basement. I'm not going to be. So it's been a little bit slow, not so much notable. However, apparently in my absence, Microsoft picked up on that. They're like, our one user is now gone, so they're finally gonna kill Internet Explorer. So we can talk about that next time.
What?
Internet Explorer.
Are they switching over to Firefox? Chrome?
You know,
did Microsoft go to Chrome?
You know, they're the last holdout.
One Mac port. Microsoft's moving to Chrome. Great. I hope we're back next Tuesday. Who knows what's gonna happen?
You know what? We may be bought out.
Wow. By who?
I tell you, if you see me leaving with a bag of fries, you know we're done.
That's right. Me and a bag of potatoes from Open Mesh or from Mesh Potato. Podnuts, now a part of the Mesh Potato Network.
It's like, yeah, I tell you, throw in a couple of coupons to Goodwill on 10% off day. We're done.
That's right. Free tots for life. All right.
That's all I got. Anybody needs to locate me, I am Tim Bauermeister on the G+. And all kidding aside, I actually did get a few responses like, hey, I know you're out there working on your car, and people sent me some really like pretty fantastic things. So you know what? Whether it's computer tech, geeks, or stuff, I mean, that's what I do here 1 hour a week. But I do I'm into everything the whole rest of the week. And so anything y'all want to send my way, please feel free. So I always enjoy that. My thank you.
Oh, that's very cool. Very cool. I'm Martin Obando, Obando Computing. I'm completely like fumbling over my words. Martin at ObandoComputing.com. You can catch me at Obando Computing in the chat. Just M Obando, Google+. If you guys want to send us an email, just like we received earlier today, geeksters@podnuts.com. If you want to send us a voicemail, 707-6-PODNUT, 707-676-3688. And don't forget to help support us with our some of the branding we have. We've got podnuts.com/Amazon, podnuts.com/eBay, podnuts.com/clothing. I'm going up, meeting up with Dor, Cody, Josh Knucklehead Tech, Jeff Owens. They're all going to come over, it sounds like, next month for Linux Fest Northwest. You know we're going to be sporting our Podnuts gear.
Man,
and I may need to go get some more. Well, my son's going. Josh is bringing his son.
Oh, my gosh.
Aaron and Chuck from Salem are coming up. So we're renting. We have a 12-person van.
Oh, that sounds like a blast.
And it's a 6-hour drive to Bellingham, Washington, which is almost to the Canadian border. And look out, Washington, because here comes the nuts.
That is fantastic.
I should get some big old Pod Nuts magnetic stickers. And
oh, man, you better get two vans because you're messing the first one up.
Maybe we'll just get that chalk. And we'll just write on it, Pod Nuts or Bust, or, who knows.
That's not your van. It's spray paint.
Yeah. It's actually, that's true. It's just a rental.
Yeah,
sweet.
It's just a rental.
It's just a rental. Just all right, guys.
Takes care of all that.
Well, and then we'll just be gruntled.
Yeah, that's it.
All right, guys. Thanks for hanging out with us today on Geeksters. And we're going to see you guys next week. Bye, guys.